to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Lyle.
And what is Idle Red Hands Weekly? It's the tiny vestigial twin you hide under your shirt that's asking you to open your mind.
This could be called Idle Red Hands Golden Weekly because it's the start of Golden Week. And people outside of Japan, Golden Week is a time when a lot of national holidays come together. And this is the longest Golden Week because we're getting a new emperor.
We're getting
the two of us are getting a new emperor.
It's going to be great.
He's coming over to the house. Yeah. So we're getting a new emperor. So there's an extra holiday, I believe. And they've just crammed it in. And we've got like a week in change.
Yes.
Off. And that's great. And my family has decided, not decided. They do this every year. So they go to go home for Golden Week to my wife's hometown. And now they're doing it for like a whole week.
Wow.
So I've been living large.
That's great.
Living large for me is I watched a couple of movies. I watched Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Oh, nice.
I like that. That Marvel movie series, I guess there's two movies called a series, that really has my number. Yeah, because Ant-Man is probably my second favorite MCU movie after Spider-Man Homecoming.
I think it's just your Paul Rudd man crush.
There's that, you know. That and what's his name? Michael Pena?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, I really like him. And I also like the other guy. T.I. He's from Atlanta. He's the rapper.
Right, yeah.
And the guy who plays the Russian one. Yeah, I think I really like that they have those developed, or not developed, but the interesting, memorable supporting characters. Mm-hmm. Plus, I'd like the dynamics between Paul Rudd and Hope Van Dyne.
Yes, yeah.
So,
yeah, she's a little too Chelsea Handler for me, but she's okay.
Because people are saying, it's a missable movie. But yeah, I got that with Venom.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
I haven't seen that one yet. And 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Mm-hmm. That was a nice find in the video store.
Oh, good.
Hot off the tails of us watching John Carter from Mars.
Yes.
Kind of related because Jules Verne, Edgar Rice Burroughs, right. I kind of lumped them in together. Howard, Verne, H.G. Wells, Burroughs.
Right.
I mean, I'm kind of extending that timeline, but I think though that's obviously a really rich area.
Yeah, and I think people are, if they're fans of one, they definitely like the others.
And this is on the eve of Jeremy and I watching two massive movies. One, Battlestar Galactica, Blood and Chrome. I finally got that movie on Blu-ray, and we're going to be seeing Endgame this evening.
Right, the Avengers Endgame. So it's the end of the MCU.
Right? Oh, good title then.
But I'm really curious what this movie's going to be, and then also where they go from here, if they've got enough characters to really keep things going. If people are looking forward to the Doctor Strange or third Ant-Man or third Guardians enough to continue the momentum.
Well, I think everybody knows the answer on the third Ant-Man for me. I think they got the characters. Actually, they said the ant is actually not the end game. Actually, Spider-Man. Oh gosh, I'm drawing a blank. What's the next Spider-Man movie called? Far From Home is actually the end of this wave of the MCU, not Endgame.
Right.
So it's the last movie in that, and then they'll kick off. I mean, they have the characters. Black Panther grown strong.
Right. Yeah,
they'll be introducing new ones. They're probably going to have one that's going to combine it. You hear the rumors, the fan rumors, but I can see them doing one with combining like different prominent female heroes.
Oh right,
and putting them together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess the question is, are they going to do an overarching story? And one idea is they'll do like something, a variation of Annihilation.
Oh, okay.
And the main bad guy in there is the aptly named Annihilus from the Negative Zone.
Right.
A friend of mine has a theory that Janet Van Dyne, Michelle Pfeiffer's character, is going to be the Annihilus of this.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So I'm trying to figure out, where did I miss an end credit scene or something? Right. How many end credit scenes did Ant-Man and the Wasp have?
I think just the one, yeah.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah.
So I'll see what he says.
Okay.
But he
there was something that,
he's convinced, so.
Wow.
Because the quantum zone, I guess, like the Negative Zone or something like that.
Right. Yeah, I'm curious. And I heard, Eternals is another property?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. And they'll feature the first prominent gay super. I don't recall if there were, I guess sexuality hasn't really played much of a part.
Maybe
that'd be the overarching thing is sexuality. It'd be a very sexual wave for the MCU.
Right.
Yeah. I think you get Star Fox, who has the rather unfortunate in post Me Too era power of seduction and there's like some pretty uncomfortable stories with him.
Yes, I'm surprised. Like this year, we're looking at the end of Game of Thrones, the end of this trilogy, the sequel trilogy of Star Wars, and now like the MCU
only the end of that this sequel trilogy, but the Skywalker saga apparently.
Yeah, so that's a lot of pop culture IPs that are going to have to regain some ground once once they get going.
Yeah. Are people going to be as interested in, the prequel?
Yeah, maybe like Knights of the Old Republic. Yeah.
No, sorry. Oh. I've heard that rumor for Star Wars. Sorry, I probably should have actually talked about which property. The Game of Thrones is going to be the prequel. I think that's a go-ahead. Mm-hmm. So see if there's the interest for that. Because people know how that story ends. One thing about Game of Thrones and why people are so interested in it is nobody knows how that story ends.
Yes.
And the same with the MCU right now is, even though it's drawn from the Infinity Gauntlet, they've changed it enough that it's its own thing. So people are like, I'm not really sure how this is going to end. But if you do a prequel, we know people who've read the stories or the books for Game of Thrones will know how that ends.
Yeah.
So.
Well, there's some interesting history, though. I mean, I think because of the way things are reconnecting, a little bit of the YouTube that I've been watching for the final season of Game of Thrones, they're going back through a lot of earlier history. And even George R.R. Martin has written some interesting like side tales and stuff.
Oh, they're great. Yeah, I'm not saying that that's not. I mean, I would certainly watch it, even though I know how it ends, because they are good stories. But I just think the Game of Thrones phenomenon has been... A part of it has been nobody knows how it's going to end. So there's not people who've read the books going, well, you're going to love this. Well, they did that in the first few seasons. And now it's like, what? Who's going to be on the Iron Throne? It's nobody knows.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and that's the thing, that those shows that kind of hook you in by surprisingly killing, major cast members or things like that. Yeah, you can't. I don't think you can sustain that. You can't go back then. Yeah, prequels don't work so well with that. And actually, like, you can't maintain that type of tension, that kind of atmosphere.
Yeah. 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 So, and I think the MCU, I guess, will be fine. I mean, certainly people want it to fail now that there's that anti-Captain Marvel backlash. Right. But yeah, that should be fine. Star Wars, The Mandalorian looks amazing.
Yeah. Well, and if they slow down and if they focus on this property and kind of getting people to like just the action and the stories again,
They're actually doing something really good in the books. Mm-hmm. Whereas they had people who are fans of the Star Wars novels, they had Timothy Zane, and he wrote one of the best Star Wars books outside of the original movies around is the Thrawn trilogy, Heir to the Empire. And that's no longer canon. Mm-hmm. Because they took place after Return of the Jedi, and now we know what happens after the Return of the Jedi. There's this new order. But then they've brought Thrawn back, and they've now reinserted him into the canon.
Mm-hmm. With the animation? Or just comics?
He's in Rebels, you're right. Yeah. The comic Thrawn, and this is... I was like, oh, the comic Thrawn. But then I thought, oh, there's actually a book. Oh, okay, so I got the book, and it's amazing. It's really good. And Star Wars audiobooks are pretty fantastic, too. They get really, really good readers, and I think they also get actors to do some of the key voices. It's really good, but I like what they've done there is they're resurrecting some really popular stuff that was abandoned or relegated to legends and now reinserting it into the canon. And that'll be good to explore. So I think that might be where Star Wars goes. It doesn't necessarily go chronologically, I guess, and continue as the other movies have, where they're going on this timeline and they might just be jumping off like the Mandalorian. They go back, they're doing Clone Wars again. They could do something with Thrawn and build that up. Mm-hmm. And
I think that's a...
Go wide instead of forward.
I think that's a good idea because I think if they're going to continue from this point, or I think that's what they need to do because I think people are kind of done with this setting that they don't know what to do with.
But they also don't know how... They obviously had no idea with this trilogy, like what were the big stakes going to be?
Yeah.
Because just the disconnect between the first movie and the second movie. And then now the third movie is like, okay, hey, Rey might have parents. Yeah, we're going to tell you more about the parents. And of course... Like everything now they do with this is just going to piss off half of the people, because now people are going, oh, it was actually great that Rey's parents were nobodies. And you know something? It doesn't matter either way,
It really doesn't.
The character is the character, What about Han Solo's parents? Do you care? Nope. No, so the character's got to be self-contained. It doesn't matter what the parents are. But now people are just, it's just one more battleground. It's just Star Wars is so divisive that the fans now.
Yeah, it's very strange. I wouldn't have ever guessed that property because, when I was a kid, it was so universally loved.
Yeah, exactly. It was Star Trek and Star Wars.
Yeah, that was the rival. Yeah.
And then Star Trek lost. Only a mad person would... Mad person, I probably shouldn't be saying that.
Oh.
Because what's wrong with being a mad person? Or can I even say that? So I guess moving on to actual gaming stuff, I saw something interesting, Kickstarter from Evil Hat Productions. Mm-hmm. That does Fate. That's their big game, and it's Fate of Cthulhu. Mm. And people are pretty excited about that, except for the lack of international shipping,
which
I guess led one person to comment that it was a dick move. And I think it was one of the first comments. Imagine doing that. You release your Kickstarter and you're like high-fiving your team. It's like, I think we're doing, oh, dick move. Oh, what? But he gave some background. I do like when people are transparent and give some background why they make those decisions. Mm-hmm. And I think in this case, it was necessary to do it. And yeah, I guess they took a bath on international shipping because the last project, but a significant project that they did to such an extent that they needed to take a loan to keep the company going forward. Mm-hmm. So lessons learned.
Yeah.
And it really depends because I kickstarted merchants, spies, and agents, secret agents. I always get confused with the title. It looks amazing, but their international shipping was really reasonable. But I guess they have different deals and stuff.
Right. And I think when we talked to Kasowinski about the Tomb Guardians thing, he said that with their second campaign, that they hooked up with a distributor, like an international distributor, to do all of the fulfillment for international, just because that keeps it under control.
Yeah.
And I think if you're trying to do it yourself, you're going to be shocked by the fluctuation in postage.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was one thing for that campaign that's, I guess, different. Mm-hmm. Another is, I guess it's not so different, but I guess they really explicitly address H.P. Lovecraft's racism and maybe something else. Anti-Semitism. Does that lump into...
That's all.
Prejudice.
That early is bigotry. 20th century
is bigotry.
Right.
And they're pretty explicit about it. I guess people are like, oh, I really like how they really called him out. And you're like, but that won't stop us from taking his ideas and making a buck. But finally, and this relates to the mad person comment, there's not insanity like in Call of Cthulhu. Mm-hmm. So people don't go progressively more insane, or it's not a detriment. They're not penalized for their mental health.
But they can be triggered though, right?
I really don't know. There's other things that they're going to do with that. But that's interesting to see what happens. I mean,
yeah, it takes away the important aspect of cosmic horror.
Yeah.
So because that's kind of people being overtaken by that idea is how they become the cultists and the kind of secret.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's an interesting version of
that. And it's going to be like at the mountains of
unease
at the mountains of strength.
Yes.
Alternative strength.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess that will help them differentiate the game from Call of Cthulhu, which is very much about insanity. But like you're saying, on the other hand, is then this Cthulhu? And I guess if you have monsters, I think Delta Green, which is related to the Cthulhu mythos, carves out its own niche. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I'm curious about that. I mean, they definitely want to cash in on the people just searching Cthulhu on Kickstarter.
Right.
Anything with Cthulhu does well. So yeah, that's a little frustrating though that they're taking away. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, it may be actually...
Is it? I don't know. You had a good point about getting a name. Like you said, you slap Cthulhu onto anything, it's going to sell. Mm-hmm. But you were talking about, you know, buying an IP because you were saying semen.
Yes. Your favorite. Yeah. Yes.
You were talking about semen.
Right.
Yeah, so. Oh, and board games. And <they've> got... Did nobody read that aloud or is that like a joke?
I don't know. I mean, I think the way it's written, I think when they came up with their little anagram, they wanted come on, you know, like you know, there's no punctuation. So people have just been saying semen. On the internet.
Oh, Simon.
Yeah, Simon. Oh, okay. Mom. But so those fine fellows that have done a lot of work on Kickstarter now have they bought the IP from Sony for Bloodborne, which is kind of kind of Dark Souls, the From Software Dark Souls. This is actually Cthulhu based. It's actually Lovecraft based, kind of just monster murdering, just kind of, you know, you're the third person character just slashing away at enemies. You've got melee and some range. And the game itself is part of that super challenging thing that became popular with Dark Souls, where the game is just hard and it just punishes you for playing. And so it's a very popular IP. And they already made a card game, but there is now going to be a miniatures-based, tile-based board game. And it's a little strange that they think that they need to use Kickstarter, because I think the strength of this IP would already sell a certain amount. And what they did that was a little interesting is they gave you, if you pledged in the first 24 hours, they gave you a 10% discount. So the base pledge is $100. If you do it in the first day of the Kickstarter, it's $90. So that 10% off generated $1.5 million
for them
in 24 hours.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, it seems like some companies are very addicted to this. Like, that's kind of how they're financially, that's how they're planning, you know, their production schedules and things, is like they need that Kickstarter money.
Yeah. I mean, Ulysses does it with mm-hmm. Torg mm-hmm. and right. Steve Jackson Games still does it, even though they had a couple debacles. I mean, they actually delivered them, but Ogre, mm-hmm. I guess, was pretty famous where the costs went crazy and right. they were an object lesson on stretch goals.
Yes. Yeah.
And then I guess the Dungeon Fantasy game didn't make any money either.
Oh, wow.
But then they're still releasing stuff on Kickstarter, like refining their model.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Kickstarter works well, and I'm sure the reason that it was created is to help individual, like independent, smaller makers and creators get stuff out there. But now that the larger companies have figured out, wow, you can have multi-million-dollar projects on this platform, that they're just going to, you know, use that as well.
Oh, well, Numenera still does it, Monty Cook Games, and he was one of the first. Yeah, it would be hard to not do it. I mean, you get the publicity.
Yes.
It does. I think it encourages impulse buying.
Yes.
And I recently saw like an early bird special deal, mm-hmm. which had the opposite effect. I mean, I was like, I wanted to get in on it, and then it lapped. I miscalculated. So then I was like, I kind of feel like I'm paying extra money now for the same thing. So I haven't pledged it, but it probably does encourage a lot of impulse buying. And then you're still going to, in a lot of cases, release it into stores mm-hmm. and then get more money that way. So it also has the advertisement. People get excited. People want to show their support.
Yeah.
So they're posting up links and mm-hmm.
I think the only thing, they have to be very careful managing kind of the toxic community that can develop around people getting suspicious of your motives, or if there's some aspect of the game that they don't like or whatever. It's frustrating. It's strange. I mean, can you imagine if, like, you know, Games Workshop or somebody with some huge money and huge fan base, like, started, let's just do Kickstarters now because we can guarantee, like, Forge World could actually probably pretty legitimately do that because the price tags that they want for a lot of things fit that kind of collector's Kickstarter model. And that's just, I mean, that's going to push out the little guys, I think. You know, people are going to be out of.
Well, yeah, I don't think CMON is a little guy anymore.
Yet. Yeah, and they're good at delivering, so I think people trust them because a lot of companies have had some problems.
To me, I was like, it's all about, you know, Ulysses delivers. Mm-hmm. I'm happy in a timely way, and then sometimes the little designer or the independent designer, they don't deliver.
Yes. Yeah. That's a problem.
Or there's massive delays on getting it, and you're like, yeah, because it's probably that person and a few other people doing it. But mm-hmm. on the other hand, I paid money and I'm still waiting for this game. I've been pretty lucky. Mm-hmm. I am waiting on some things, but I've been pretty lucky. But
I haven't taken a bath on anything. The worst, I lost a euro on the confrontation, but I just wanted to watch the train wreck of that Kickstarter. But someone in the comments on the confrontation re-release listed all of the Kickstarters that they lost money, and it was like thousands of dollars. They listed like at least half a dozen.
Yeah, you know, I'm confident I'm eventually going to get the two late games. I know we're both, and I'm not counting Siege of the Citadel because we would have gotten that, but we both chose to wait until all the expansions come out.
Right.
Yeah, I'm confident I'm going to get Torg Nihil Empire, but the two that I'm waiting on, one, they give frequent updates, so I think I'm going to get it. But if I maybe won. Mm-hmm. I guess I would still do Kickstarters, but if I lost money on two Kickstarters, I'd be out. I'd be done with Kickstarter.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but you got some personal interesting news.
Just released was the Things from the Flood. So we got that kind of 90s expansion for Tales from the Loop.
Okay.
Yes. And Tales from the Loop is, if you don't remember, we did a review about it. It's kind of Stranger Things or the Goonies kind of set. And the two settings that come with the book itself are Sweden and the US. But we thought a great setting, just because of our location, a great setting for that game would be Japan in the 80s. So I'm currently working on, I found a city that I like that's kind of the right size. It's got a military base just across the water. It's got a weird listening station right in the middle of town. So there's a big cement square with antennas. So it has the kind of the right feel for this setting. And basically what you need to do is set up a city and locations where the kids would be, like their schools and their homes and everything, and then put a loop underground that's going to be kind of the center of all the activity. So currently I'm working on putting the map and the locations together. And I think what I also want to do is modify kind of what you recommend for the characters, because everything needs to be themed a little bit more Japanese.
Right.
Overall, the idea is it's going to be kind of a subtitled. I think the appeal would be to have a map with a lot of Japanese, like a lot of kanji and things. I think some people would enjoy that. Try to walk the line where you're not in the play session having to pronounce a lot of you know, long Japanese place names or family names or anything, mm-hmm. and find a way to kind of make it fun to play for people that don't want to deal with any Japanese, but have the feeling and the setting work well. Because I think, you know, giant robots and monsters and things in 80s Japan is exactly a setting that would work for that game system.
You have to scale down those kaiju, though.
Yeah.
Mini kaiju. Right. I always see Japan as like one decade off. Mm-hmm. From North America, whereas right. like some of the fashions that we saw in the 90s looked similar to fashions we saw in the 80s. Mm-hmm. What they were watching, what they were reading, and those kind of things.
Yeah, I definitely want to put together like a playlist of 80s J-pop and kind of like, yeah, give people the flavor of what's going on.
Pituka Santa Claus. I don't know if that's the 80s. It's like Santa Claus is my lover. Matsuda Seiko, you have to
look
up her. The Pink Ladies. And they have UFO and
Yes, right.
And Spitz.
Yeah, there's a lot of... Yeah, and I think, so just that J-pop will give you some nice flavor. The one consideration that I want to kind of try to explain in this setting is it would be fun to play it as a dubbed Japanese 80s movie. No, but a lot of that dubbing was like bizarre, like, you know, British accents, and, you know, it made no sense. And it'd be fun to play a game, you know, to add that one more layer of kind of pop culture where you are a badly dubbed, you know, kid in the 80s.
Or you could do, because there's certain things, we've talked about this before, I think, mm-hmm. on the cast, but Japanese acting is different than Western acting. It comes from a more kabuki school.
Right.
Which is didn't emphasize more naturalistic mm-hmm. Style that we've come to embrace in the West. But there are certain things that are pretty prevalent. There's always the sick dying kid love story.
right.
There's the turn your back to everybody in monologue. Mm-hmm. That's very common in dramas, and everybody just kind of stands there. So, right. I mean, of course, the bleeding nose, you know, from mm-hmm. manga.
Right.
You're sexually aroused. But you could take their own tropes in that, and you, mm-hmm. as opposed to using like the Western filter and what we've done, but like going, I mean, you're right here. So you got the source, but taking their own tropes, I think, would be really interesting and provide a different play style.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the difficult thing would be to convey that, because people would be able to grasp what you're saying about the dub thing more easily, because that's what they're getting if they're not in Japan. Whereas saying, why do I turn around and monologue here? And why is no one else is allowed to speak?
Yeah.
You know,
well, maybe just like anime, we can release the dub and subtitle version of the setting. So you can play it either way.
But either way, you're going to overact.
Yeah, yes, right.
This kind of thing. Yes. I think that would, you know, Tales from the Loop, like mm-hmm. other Year Zero games, mm-hmm. I think they really do the principles of the game.
Yes.
Is really good. But that could be one of the principles is don't be natural.
Yeah, right.
You know, overact. And I think that could be really fun for people at the table when someone is monologuing. Don't interrupt. This is their time. Now, we got a few game ideas that we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. I got to finish my spaceship game for GURPS and Powered by the Apocalypse, probably.
Right, and Chris had a cyberpunk setting for Powered by the Apocalypse that he was working on as well, just kind of a generic,
that
he built a website for. So once that's finished, we'll definitely...
Yeah, that's good. And then we're talking about something a little bit more biblical, but maybe it's in the early stages.
Yeah.
That could involve all of us working together.
That would be great, yeah.
You know, the Japan game is a throwback to the 80s. Let's just say this was a throwback to the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
As we develop that further and get it more, we'll talk about that a little bit more. But we're pretty excited about that. We just started talking about it today.
Yes, yeah.
Things are coming together pretty quickly. But it's nice to have time to do this.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Hey, one more thing I wanted to mention that is in contrast to, you know, when I was talking about the Bloodborne Kickstarter and raising millions of dollars, is I just saw that Free League has a license to do an alien RPG.
Okay,
so they're going to do an alien setting. Yeah. And it doesn't look like they're going to Kickstarter it. So they understand the power of that IP, and they know that they're probably going to make their money back, at least for the licensing, on doing that setting. And so far, they've released some pre-production work, some settings, and some really interesting stuff. And it looks like they're gonna handle it well. It almost looks like you're going to be able to do both Alien and Aliens, because there were some Space Marine-looking type characters.
Well, I guess there was a game in 91 called Aliens, and it was more based on the Aliens movie, the James Cameron.
Right.
Game over, man. Improvised.
Yes. Yeah, that's crazy.
that game by Leading Edge Games was based on that. And yeah, I think you pretty much just play. I think you could play other things, but it was pretty much kind of like, Colonial Marines.
Right, right. Yeah, so I'm curious what Free League is going to do with this and if they're going to use the Year Zero system or there's going to be modifications of that, you know? So it'll be a nice thing to see as it develops, because right now we're just getting kind of pre-production.
Because they do like Kickstarter.
They haven't announced anything for this. Yeah. So that was...
Yeah, just like Mechatron, probably Mutant Year Zero.
Yes.
Yeah. Certainly Forbidden Lands. So they all came from Kickstarter.
Right, right.
Elysium, it was a Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's how it should work. If these are like unproven IPs and you're developing something you're going to own, the help, you know, Kickstarter helping you make, you know, kind of give you some financial security, because you can cancel a Kickstarter, just say, okay, we're not even going to press with this. There's just not enough interest. But when you buy an IP, you know there's interest. It's built in. So do you really need to?
Yeah, I guess they crunch the numbers and you look at how much the IP cost versus, you know, how much you would be given to Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, okay, it's probably, you know, we're already investing enough money in the IP that we don't want to cut even more into our profit margin. Because I know you say about the cynicism backlash.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, gamers. There are certain things that they'll get up in arms about, but companies sucking money out of their wallets doesn't seem to be the one. I mean, they'll buy anything, man.
That's true.
Except for Critical Role seems to get backlash for that animated thing, which made $15 million, like several million.
Yeah, that's crazy. So that's it for our week. But so. Lyle, so you're running the Idle Red Hands Twitter. So if people want to get a hold of you or fight with you or comment on something that you've said.
I'm actually trying to keep Idle Red Hands Twitter pretty positive.
Okay, good.
I'm mostly like, hey, that looks great.
But if people want to get in touch, I guess the website, both links to their website and the Twitter would be where people could react. And also the comments underneath this podcast. Yeah, and we will definitely keep people updated with the personal projects we're working on. So as soon as things get a little bit further, we'll post links for that.
Yeah, looking forward to the city reveal for the 80s Japanese.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right. Yeah, so as soon as I have that up, I'll start posting. Yeah, so that'll be something that'll definitely be on idleredhands.com and probably in the Twitter too. We'll may need to start hinting. And actually, while I'm working on it, I probably should just put images on Instagram, because that would be a nice tease, like pieces of map and pieces of the, gonna do like illustrations, I think, for the kid types, because I want to shift the kid types a little bit, because I think the setting that they have works, or the choices that they have work. So I want to theme them just a little bit differently.
Okay, yeah, sounds good.
The Japanese setting.
Yeah, it is. It was. I mean, it's not very profound, but yeah, Japan, like a childhood in Japan is pretty different from a childhood back home.
Yeah. I think there would be some fun stuff to put in the description and help people get the flavor of, yeah, just like Sweden is a, for, you know, North American players, that's a little bit of a foreign, very different, isolated feeling. And I think Japan can have that same, have a same sort of unique flavor.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's all for this week. Please subscribe to our regular podcast and also the YouTube channel, where there's a video version of that will be posted. This happens every week, so we will see you next week.
Bye.
Goodbye. On and on, some sonic grind.